ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्यम् नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीरुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 62 एंटाइटल्ड द मीटिंग ऑफ उषा एंड अनिरुद्ध टेक्स्ट नंबर 31। स ताम प्रविष्टम वृतम आततायिभिर् भटैर् अनिकैर् अवलोक्य माधवः उद्यम्य मोर्वं परिघं व्यवस्थितो यथान्तको दण्डधरो जिगांसया। स तं प्रविष्टं वृतमाततायिभिर् भटैरनकैरवलोक्य माधव उद्यममौरं परिघं व्यवस्थितो यथान्तको दण्डधरो जिगांसया। स तं प्रविष्टं वृतमाततायिभिर् भटैरनीकैरवलोक्य माधव उद्यम्य मौरं परिघं व्यवस्थितो यथान्तको दण्डधरो जिगांसया। स तं प्रविष्टं वृततं वृतमातयायिभिर् भटैरनीकैरवलोक्य माधव उद्यम्य मौरं परिघं व्यवस्थितो यथान्तको दण्डधरो जिगांसया। लोक्य माधव जिगांसया। स तं प्रविष्टं वृततमाततायिभिर् भटैरनीकैर्त्यवलोक्य माधव यतान्तको दण्डधरो जिगांसया। माताजी प्रविष्टं वृतमाततायिभिर् भटैरनीकैरवलोक्य माधव उद्यम्य मौरं परिघं व्यवस्थितो यथान्तको दण्डधरो जिगांसय सः हि अनिरुद्ध तम हिम बाणासुर प्रविष्टम एंटर्ड वृतम सराउंडेड आतताई भी हु वर कैरिंग वेपन्स भटई बाई गार्ड्स अनेकहि न्यूमरस अवलोक्य सीन माधव अनिरुद्ध उद्यम्य रेजिंग मौर्वम मेड ऑफ मुरु आयन परिघम हिज क्लब व्यवस्थितः स्टैंडिंग फॉर्म यथा लाइक अंतकः डेथ पर्सोनिफाइड दंडा द रॉड ऑफ पनिशमेंट धरः बेरिंग जिगामसया रेडी टू स्ट्राइक Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation, seeing Banasur enter with many guards, Anirudh raised his iron club and stood resolute, ready to strike anyone who attacked him. He resembled death personified, holding his rod of punishment. Purport. The club was not made of ordinary iron, but of a special kind called Muru. Since this is a one-line purport, we'll cover Text 32 and 33. Jigrisayatan parita prasarpatah suno yatha shukara yathopo anahat te hanyamana bhavanad vinirgata nirbhinna muru dhuru bhuja pradur dhru. Translation, as the guards converged on him from all sides trying to capture him, Anirudh struck them as the leader of a pack of boar strikes back at dogs. Hit by his blows, the guards fled the palace, running for their lives with shattered heads, thighs and arms. 33. Tam nagapashair balinandano bali gnatam gnantan svansainyam kupito babandaha उषा वृषम शोक विषाद विवला बद्धम निशम्या शुकलाक्षि अश्वत्थश्रेत. Translation and purport. But even as Anirudh was striking down the army of Bana, that powerful son of Bali angrily caught him with the mystic Nagapasha ropes. When Usha heard of Anirudh's capture, she was overwhelmed with grief and depression. Her eyes filled with tears and she wept. Purport. The Acharyas explained that Banasur could not actually capture the powerful grandson of Lord Krishna. However, the Lord's Lila Shakti, or the pastime potency, allowed this to happen so that the events described in the next chapter could take place. Thus ends the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 62nd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Meeting of Usha and Anirudh. Om Agyanti Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Dam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavade Paschatya Deshatarine Namo Mahamadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurutushe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapt Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalvadarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyayevacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Satam pravishtam mritamatata yivir bhatir anikair avalokya madhava Udyamya mauravam parigham yavastito yathandhako dandadharo jigam saya Seeing Banasur entered with many guards, Anirudh raised his iron club and stood resolute, ready to strike anyone who attacked him. He resembled death personified holding his rod of punishment. This is the conclusion of this chapter where the climax is unfolding, where Anirudh has been caught by Banasur's guards, his entry into the palace, and the way Usha has exhibited the symptoms of losing her virginity has made Banasur nervous and angry. And as he's entering the palace and seen Anirudh sitting with Usha playing dice and exchanging smiling glances, and this makes Banasur retaliate and attack Anirudh, who now defends himself by raising his iron club and ready to strike in a way that befits an honorable Kshatriya. Since yesterday was the momentous occasion of Pandav Nirjal Ekadashi, and today is another momentous day of breaking the fast, the much awaited moment is 6 a.m. in the morning. And this is yesterday Damodar Prabhu spoke very nicely about the Nirjal Ekadashi. So I thought we should begin with speaking on Dwadashi. And therefore, we'll find there are numerous great souls who used to perform such fast, not for a day, but for 48 days. Like Ambarish Maharaj performing that Vrata of fasting for 48 days for the benefit of his citizens. Even Rantidev Maharaj fasted for a long span of time. And imagine how they were to break their fast. Both of them were about to break their fast at an opportune muhurta time. And in one case, Durvas Muni comes, in case of Ambarish Maharaj, and forbids him in a way, or prolongs his fast breaking. So much so that he has to break the fast only with a little water, to have completed his fast formalities in the interest of the citizens. Even Rantidev Maharaj performed the fast for the interest of his citizens. So the whole point of performing this Ekadashi Vrat or even fasting is meant for the benefit of the larger mass of people. In case of kings and in case of Brahmins, they used to perform this fast for the benefit of the society. In any case, every act of worship of the Supreme Lord was in the benefit of the larger masses of people. It was never a personal act of sadhana. It is not limited just to one personal act of sadhana. It is actually meant for the welfare of the larger good. So here we find that Rantidev Maharaj also was approached by the Shudra, was approached by Chandala, was approached by the Brahman, till actually he could not even break his fast. And what was his consciousness? The consciousness was, let me just live for the benefit of all the living entities and serve them and make Lord, give me the strength to be an instrument of his compassion. Therefore we find the great souls who actually have gone through a lot of hardship and struggle have simply acted in the benefit of the larger good in a way that they may receive the gift of Krishna consciousness without any difficulty. And here, once there is a nice narration from one of the sannyasis in the Gaudiya Math, and he was talking about the attitudes of fasting. Generally when one fasts, one is very proud that one is fasting, the other one is eating. And either there is moroseness, if there is a feast in front of us, or there is pride. Because the idea is that I am fasting, another is feasting, there is one emotion that can come that why everybody is feasting when I am fasting. And then see everybody is feasting while I am fasting. So the idea of fasting is that is to make us humble, is to make us more tolerant, and is to make us more an instrument for the benefit of everyone. So the benefits of the fasting is actually is an opportunity to offer our consciousness in the benefit of so many other people who actually are fasting more than us. There is a survey by UN survey which presents a fact, a statistic of around 792 million people in this world who are suffering from hunger every day. That means around 79 crores of people fighting hunger, and we have a choice to fast. Those people don't even have a choice. And in India alone, it is around 198 million, that is 19.8 crores of people were actually fasting every day. And they have no opportunity to receive even the benefit of a full meal. Gurudas Prabhu was talking to Srila Prabhupada and he was asking about how in Nandagram, how he can actually experience the benefit of bhakti. And Prabhupada said, when he was seeing the beautiful art and everything around, he said, art means full belly. Art can be practiced only on a full belly. One can only make beautiful arts, one can do actually wonderful services when one is satisfied in the belly. And no art can be performed with an empty stomach. Similarly, anything good that can happen in this world cannot happen without equal distribution of resources in a way that everybody is given the basic necessities of life. And therefore, we find that Prabhupada was saying, similarly, Krishna consciousness means full belly, full heart. Similarly, when we have to fill the belly, the heart is empty. Similarly, if we keep our consciousness in Krishna, in the mode of pleasing Krishna always, serving Krishna all the time, then the happiness will come as a result of it. And therefore Krishna consciousness creates conditions of happiness. Conditions of happiness are not prerequisite to developing of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, this beautiful chapter of Isha and Anirudh has been explaining about the Leela Shakti of Krishna by which Anirudh was being caught. So we'll just discuss a little bit how Mahajans have fought against Krishna. The future is unraveled in this capture of Anirudh. When Narendra has been captured, it is now set the scene for Krishna to enter and fight with Banasur, who will be now supported by Shivji. So Shivji is a great devotee of Krishna, is now going to fight with Krishna. This is another Leela that is unfolding in the next chapter. And this Leela happens occasionally with Mahajans. Because Krishna trusts them that they will not spoil the party. They will not do something which will actually not lead to conclusion of pure devotional service and ultimate surrender to Krishna. Therefore, they participate in this contradictory and conflicting leelas in a way to enhance the rasa of bhakti, the exchange of divine mellows between the Krishna and his devotees. We find in the similar episode of Bhishma Dev also fighting against Krishna and also inciting a huge battle in a way that the transcendental mellows of bhakti were exchanged on a battlefield. So practically all the rasas are been exchanged on a battlefield. We'll find also Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, they actually exchange the mellows of that transcendental loving exchange with Vishnu in a fight. And in the fight, there are devotees who become spectators and also enjoy that leela and also exchange transcendental mellows. We find Arjuna also exchange transcendental mellows because Bhishma was fighting on the other side. So this great Mahajan, Bhishma Dev, is an example for all of us. How to increase the happiness of Krishna by even entering a mode of conflict with Krishna, of interest. So externally and superficially it was all against Krishna. But we find sometimes, most of the time we talk about Bhishma as being the spectator who saw all injustice happening and did not actively take a role to avert that disaster. So when one is very much, Bhishma Dev represents that personality who is very much fixed in his self vow. The vow is very strong and very fixed. But the vow acts in the interest of the larger good. A lesson to be learned from Bhishma's life is that he was very perfect in his own behavior and own character. Blemishless, spotless. Yet, his spotless character proved to be an impediment to the interest of the governance. So, we find that in his position of Bhishma, he should have acted in the interest of a good governance than on the interest in the interest of fulfilling his own vow. And therefore, these nuances of bhakti are something which actually make Krishna consciousness very dynamic and very participating. It's not a bookish kind of experience that we get by reading books. Therefore, Mahajano Yena Gatasa Pantha, when we look into the lives of such great Mahajans, they have simply volumes of books to be revealed by their example and by their life. Therefore, Bhishma Dev, right from his, the whole character is contradicting. The whole character is conflicting. Yet, how Bhishma Dev leaves the battlefield and leaves his life heirs on the battlefield of Kurukshetra is something which is revealing the highest transcendental mellows of loving exchanges with Krishna. And therefore today, we'll discuss a little bit of the episode of Bhishma Dev entering into that war with Krishna and how he has fought the battle in a way that urged Arjun to come out of his complacency. Arjun was fighting on the 10th day of war. Till 9 days, Bhishma was simply ravaging and destroying the Pandav forces, killing them by the numerous of thousands. Someday 14,000 chariot warriors were killed, someday 20,000, someday ranks of the various Pandavas, allies were being completely brutally massacred, and all of them were very much disturbed. Yudhishthir Maharaj felt in the middle of the battlefield, now it's time to give up the battle. Let's give up this battle and go to the forest. What Arjun was talking at the beginning of the war, Yudhishthir used to talk in the middle of the war. And when Yudhishthir Maharaj was now thinking what to do, now only way to is to ask Bhishma Dev himself how he can be defeated. So they decided. So one thing they took without Krishna's advice was Yudhishthir Maharaj's helplessness, which led him to take a decision to go to Bhishma Dev and ask him, how will you be defeated? This was their relationship with Bhishma Dev. They could go and ask him that please give us this way out to defeat you. So they went to the, they gave their armor, the shields and everything, and they went that night on the 10th day to the camp of Bhishma Dev, and they respectfully offered their obeisances, and they requested him, "Will you please kindly reveal the way to defeat you?" And he said, "If Shikhandi comes and attacks me, I will give up my weapons. I will not fight." So this happened in the next day war, where everyone was rallying to counteract Bhishma, where Shikhandi was shooting weapons at Bhishma, but they were like flower arrows. They were not causing any harm. Arjun was trying to shoot arrows at Bhishma, but Arjun was doing it very mildly. He was doing it like a formality, right? And therefore Bhishma Dev was again killing so many thousands of soldiers. Krishna understood the mind of Arjun. He was not willing to give his 100%. And therefore Krishna was disturbed. And he said, "This is the time where I will take it in my hands." This is the first vow that Krishna, first time that he broke his vow. There are three times where Krishna breaks his vow on the battlefield of not taking weapons. Now here, Krishna has taken a vow and is breaking the vow, but Bhishma Dev has not given up his vow till now. And therefore, this shows that how Krishna is flexible to even his own vow. So he gets down from the chariot, he holds that wheel and rushes towards Bhishma. And Bhishma is so welcoming to Krishna, because in this first exchange of mellow, he has forced Krishna to break his vow. Right? This is how the devotees want to relate with Krishna. How Krishna will break his vow for his devotees. Not that I made that vow to be broken. No, because Krishna is concerned for his devotees' welfare. Why? Because the devotees will look into the welfare of so many of them. So many of the others dependent on them. Only devotees of Krishna can think of welfare of the entire civilization. Therefore, Krishna entrusts complete faith and trust into the devotees' welfare, because he knows that they will take care of the welfare of everyone. They will not be selfish. They will not be just self-concerned. Like Parikshit Maharaj on the when Shukdev Goswami is giving him narration about the various types of hells. And Parikshit Maharaj is concerned about the suffering of these people who are suffering in the hell and how they can be relieved from that suffering. Similarly, we find that Parikshit Maharaj is now concerned more about how others will be liberated in the future and therefore causing the Bhagavatam to be narrated. Similarly, Prabhupada explains in the purport where Arjun is never in a doubt. Krishna reveals everything to a sincere devotee within the heart. He doesn't have to give them a sermon. Arjun is creating that atmosphere of instruction to be given just so that others will take benefit from this conversation. And therefore, a devotee sometimes in bewilderment looks bewildered, or in a state of confusion looks bewildered, but actually is very much situated by Krishna's instruction within. So Bhishma Dev has created that condition where Arjun's mild response in the war has angered Krishna. Krishna is not angry at Arjun and telling him anything, but he's just taking that chariot wheel and rushing towards Bhishma. Bhishma is now very much happy. He sees Krishna's form in anger, because that's the rasa that he was wanting to experience for a long time. This is the price of Bhishma fighting war against the Pandavas. He could see Krishna in that form, and this was his longing, because that was his rasa of mellow of exchange with Krishna. So he fulfilled the rasa, but Arjun was now feeling that he has let down Krishna. He didn't become a spectator now. He became aroused in his consciousness. If Krishna has to take up the weapon and break his vow, then it is disgrace for a devotee to not acting completely in surrender to Krishna. If Krishna has to look into everything, despite he giving so much of his grace and his compassion, "I have let down Krishna," therefore he went running after Krishna, trying to hold him back. He actually was being dragged by Krishna for a long distance. And here Arjun is trying to hold his feet and begging and praying, "I will fight and kill Bhishma today." When Arjun has sufficiently convinced Krishna, then Krishna withdraws. And then the war rages. And when we find that Shikhandi is coming again in front of Krishna, Arjuna is shooting arrows, he is breaking his bow, he is breaking the bow of Bhishma thrice. He then uses darts and many other weapons. Shields is broken. Bhishma is now given up his urge to fight. He has lost his urge to fight, and this is the time where he thinks now it's the time for me to give up. And that's when Arjuna pierces his arrows. So many arrows that there is not even a single finger distance between these two arrows. It was a very painful exercise for Arjuna to do this. The very same Bhishma, the grandfather who actually raised all the five Pandavas on his lap, was now being an adversary who had to be felled. So Bhishma Dev now falls on his bed of arrows and is requesting, please give me a pillow. All the Kaurav soldiers are getting the pillow, some silken pillows, some nice pillows, and then Bhishma saying, this is not a pillow befitting a Kshatriya. Arjun shoots three arrows and makes a comfortable headrest on the basis of this three arrows. And Bhishma Dev is now asking for some water. And then Arjun pierces the ground with his arrow and there is a stream of water coming. Prabhupada says that this was the kind of boring used to take place before. The water is made in the boring system and there are machines nowadays to do that, but earlier the technology was there with the weapons. Right? Now there is a legislation by the Maharashtra government that you cannot dig a bore beneath 200 feet. Because the groundwater has become depleting and this kind of situation will create a great dire condition for the entire state. But Arjun knew exactly where the water was. Usually boar has to go and he has to dig. There is a technology. In fact, when we had to dig the bore well for the farm in Karjat, we had to find, there was a technology where you hold a coconut and then you have to see where this coconut ultimately falls from your hand in balance. So it falls in a particular place. There is a gravitational pull of the water below. That means there is water below here. So fortunately the bore wells which are dug got water below 150 feet. So these technologies were there and therefore they were employed. So now Bhishma Dev is on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. The war is over now. The second vow which Krishna broke was the time when Bhagdatta was fighting with Arjun and he had released that Vaishnav weapon. And when he had released that Vaishnav weapon, Arjun was ready to counteract it, but Krishna got in the middle and braced that weapon with him and it became a flower of arrows. Arrows which were just a garland, ultimately that weapon converted into it. And Arjun was very disturbed. Why have you broken this vow again? Krishna said, this vow had to be broken without your seeking your permission, because this Vaishnava weapon is the weapon given by me to Narkasur and the son of Bhumi Devi, and he had in turn given this weapon to Bhagadatta, his son. And this weapon can never be counteracted by anyone. And therefore I had to break that vow. The third time Krishna breaks the vow is when Ashwatthama releases Brahmastra weapon, where Krishna himself counteracts that weapon with his own personal effulgence. So these are the three instances of where Krishna has broken his vow. And here Bhishma Dev is now on the bed of arrows. And here Yudhishthira Maharaj is not ready to govern, is not ready to take up the responsibilities of administration. Arjuna was not willing to take the responsibility of fighting the war, and here Yudhishthira Maharaj is not taking the responsibility of governance. And he knew that Bhishma is the only one personality that can convince Yudhishthira Maharaj. Can you imagine, this is the place, this is the time when Arjuna is a very good friend with Krishna, but Krishna has faith in Arjuna that he will listen. But Yudhishthira Maharaj was too idealistic. He needed a very, very sattvic and a very respectable personality like Bhishma Dev to explain him. People of integrity and character like to hear from people of integrity and character. So therefore, Bhishma Dev was a person of integrity, and even that flaw of so-called integrity that had Bhishma came to be used in Krishna's service. So for three reasons, Bhishma Dev is being visited by party of Pandavas along with Krishna and all the rishis, where he finds that there is Yudhishthira Maharaj is coming with all nicely dressed of robes, because that will please Bhishma. So we find that Bhishma Dev, when he sees Yudhishthira Maharaja, for three reasons Krishna wanted to execute this pastime. First is to eliminate the guilt of Yudhishthira Maharaj. Secondly, to eliminate the misgivings about Bhishma Dev. And thirdly, to eliminate the bondage of Bhishma and give him the beautiful darshan while his final departure. So we find that Yudhishthira Maharaj is nicely dressed and he is coming there, and his guilt is being removed by Bhishma Dev by his various instructions. And he gives a fantastic set of instructions to Bhishma, and Bhishma recounts why this Pandavas had to suffer. Actually, this was the Lila Shakti of Krishna, by which actually they've suffered. They suffered in a way that they had the best pious acts. They had the pious, they were powerful in management. They had powerful resources. They had powerful weapons. In spite of having everything on their side, why they had to suffer, finally concludes it is Kala. It is a time which is beyond the control of any human being, and one must succumb to it. So, in this way, all the sages are now assembling in front of Bhishma Dev, because a great scene of departure is to take place. Therefore, when great souls leave their mark while leaving, they actually give a very strong impression of Vaishnav conduct. Similarly, we find in the case of His Holiness Bhaktitirth Maharaj, when he was in his last stages of departure, he was actually asking his disciples, seeing all this pain in him, he was asking whether we like to have this pain. And all this time, his pain he was experiencing, he was actually not willing to trade this pain. Because he was saying that to His Holiness Radhakrishna Swami Maharaj, that this is not the ecstasy that I am willing to trade for anything in this world. The ecstasy of the pain is actually the wonderful gift of Krishna. And many devotees came in front of him. The Varshana devotees came from Barsana Nandagram. They presented beautiful bhajans of Srimati Radharani. There were beautiful deities of Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Radha Damodar, who actually came to give Bhaktitirtha Maharaj his final grace. And he was very much concerned about the sufferings of the entire population. Bhaktitirtha Maharaj was very gracefully, he actually fought like a warrior in the Mahabharata his whole life. And the end of his life, he wanted to read the narrations of various beautiful pastimes of Vrindavan. His son Radhanath Swami Maharaj would describe the beautiful pastimes of Vrindavan, Krishna lifting the Giriraj hill. And as soon as he heard about Giriraj, and Maharaj requested, can you come out and have a darshan and do like a parikrama which Srila Prabhupada wanted to do, like in his last years. So he was escorted back outside to the small Govardhan hill in their campus, where he was given the darshan. And in this way, this was a transcendental exchange of bhava between two devotees at the last stages of departure. So this is the highest expression of transcendental mellows, wherein devotees inspire each other to remember Krishna at their final times. So here, this is called Vaishnava appreciation and Vaishnava inspiration. All devotees are gathering to encourage the departure of such a great soul. And similarly, we find that even if His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Maharaj was in difficulty, he was nevertheless very much eager to hear and chant. He was chanting his rounds every day. He was counting his rounds even through his last days, just to give an example how important it is to follow the vow of chanting daily. So when Bhishma Dev is now on the battlefield, he's when all the sages come, he is not able to receive them well because he is not able to welcome them physically, but his mind is in very good condition. His mind is very fit to receive. So he first of all offers his respects and then offers his prayers to all of them. And this way Prabhupada explains how one should be respectful, one should maintain the concerns, conscious of duty, and one should be very much ready to utilize whatever one resources has in a very practical way. And Prabhupada mentions, therefore, in time, place and situations, the acharyas have adopted the ways of reaching out to the conditioned souls. Prabhupada mentions this purport, that because of various situations and times and places, we will have to adopt. And a very powerful acharya knows how to adopt various practices and conditions suitable to various time, place and situations in order that the message of Krishna consciousness is made relevant. And therefore, we find that similarly here, when Bhishma Dev is speaking on all these terms, he is experiencing, Prabhupada is mentioning this purport that it is actually the plan of Krishna. And how plan of Krishna was there to experience this transcendental bhav of loving exchanges. And Prabhupada mentions that the three categories of transcendental dealings on different platform, Yashoda and Arjun, they both were subordinate. Krishna was subordinate to both of them. While riding the chariot, Krishna was subordinate to Arjun. And while being a child of Yashoda, he was subordinate to his love, her love. So in this way Krishna experiences the transcendental mellows. In cases of Shukdev Goswami and four Kumars, who were actually very much liberated, but Krishna still encouraged and inspired them to render pure devotion service. That was another platform of transcendental mellow. The third was with Pandavas and Chitraketu Maharaj and Parikshit, where they were put into the transcendental mellow of being experiencing tribulations. They were constantly being harassed by various difficulties and tribulations, because this is another way Krishna experiences or gives the experience of transcendental mellow, by taking everything, because a devotee still in this world has been caught up by the bondage of material and illusory relationships. Prabhupada mentions that these relationships are based on the available of material resources. So Krishna wants to sever these illusory relationships by severing the resources. So he removes all the shelter of the resources, material resources, and makes a devotee helpless simply to take shelter of internal energy of Krishna. And then Krishna experiences, or the devotee experiences, that complete shelter by which only the reciprocation is with Krishna on a spiritual platform. And therefore we find that this transcendental relationship is an experience by so many devotees like Chitraketu Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj, in a very fantastic way. Therefore Prabhupada explained that tribulations and favor should be received as benediction of Krishna. Because in tribulation there is a favor of Krishna. And a favor, there is responsibility of Krishna. Because when all the tribulations were being experienced by the Pandavas, simply to wage a war, and when the war was won, now they had another tribulation with Yudhishthira Maharaj. How to administer a kingdom which is being tainted with the blood of so many of his own relatives and so many soldiers. So imagine, that also was a tribulation for Yudhishthira Maharaj. And therefore that tribulation should have been taken as a benediction, and therefore that is a favor of Krishna. And therefore when there is a tribulation, there should be gratitude, and when there is a favor, there should be a responsibility. And in this way we find that Krishna always employs his Leela Shakti to enhance these sweet reciprocations between his devotees. These are very personal and intimate. Similarly, when Arjun was traveling as a pilgrimage to various places before the war began, he visited Rameshwaram. And he visited Rameshwaram, the Setu Bandha. He was wondering, why did Ram, we heard from Vyas Muni that Ram was a very great archer. Because he was an archer, therefore he was also having an affinity for Lord Ram. If Ram is a great archer, why didn't he just make this Setu with his arrows? And then this was a doubt, and Hanumanji, who is a Chiranjeev, was meditating on Lord Ram. And he came there. He was a little offended by the thoughts of Arjun. And he came and told him that this Lord Ram, Sri Ram considered a lot before making this Setu, how this Setu should be constructed. Because the weight of the Vanar soldiers those times were very huge. You cannot imagine. You are from Dwapar Yug. Trita Yug was something different. So you are thinking on your Dwapar brain that this Setu could have been made by arrows. That is your level of understanding. But actually, Sri Ram knew that these huge armies of monkeys, anyways, they are prone to jump all the time, and they are very heavy weight. This bridge would break. Said, then let's have a wager. Why don't you jump on a bridge made by my arrows? And if this bridge breaks, then I will enter the fire and give up my life. Arjun's typical way of exhibiting his Kshatriya pride. So then Hanumanji ready to jump, and Arjun was made the bridge, and Hanumanji, just his tail fell on that bridge, and the whole bridge collapsed. And said, do you see why Ramji did not build the bridge with arrows? So now Arjun was ready to enter the funeral pyre. And a Brahman comes and says, hey, what's happening here? Some problem with both of you. But who's the witness between both of you? There is no witness. Therefore the case is dismissed. So only the thing can happen again. Okay, retake the whole thing. Okay, you want to do the whole thing? I am the witness now. Next time again, Arjun, are you ready for a wager? Arjun was another chance to salvage his pride. He said, this time you do again. This Brahman was none other but by Krishna in Dwapar Yug. And he was the same Ram in Treta Yug. And Hanumanji was now ready again. The bridge was built with his arrows. And now Hanumanji jumped on the bridge. And nothing happened. It was the Brahman who was with his shoulder anchoring the whole bridge beneath, and there was blood oozing out from the shoulder. And then both of them realized that actually Hanuman realized that he is Ram, and Arjun realized he is Krishna. And Krishna has come to save his devotee from his perils again. Hanumanji was told, I will come again because you shouldered me while taking me across this bridge. Today I am shouldering my devotee who is in difficulty. Similarly, this is how Arjun and Hanuman experience, and this is a Lila Shakti of Krishna. Sometimes he takes away the powers, and in taking away the powers, he actually gives the greatest shelter. And wherever Krishna does this, he is actually doing it for a higher reason. When Arjun was bringing all the princes back from Dwarka, these princes were actually the heavenly damsels were prayed to Ashtavakra Muni that they give him Krishna as their husband. But while seeing his form bent in many places, they laughed, and therefore Ashtavakra Muni cursed them that once Krishna leaves them, they'll have to lose Krishna as their husband and they will be kidnapped by rogues. And therefore, because of this, Arjun, when he was bringing all them back, so it was the Lila Shakti of Krishna by which Arjun lost all his powers to defend the princes. And both of them, Arjun got his taste of mercy, of remembrance of Bhagavad Gita again. And the princes were reaping the fruits of their own misconduct. So in this way Krishna gave the results befitting the both group of devotees. And similarly, Ramji himself becomes overpowered by the arrows of Indrajit. Once, when the Nagpash, the same Nagpash has bound Aniruddha. Once by Nagpash, by which Ram and Lakshman become bound, and they become unconscious. When Garuda comes, then he releases them from the Nagpash. So Krishna exhibits himself in the face of such situations where he himself becomes overpowered by his own Lila Shakti. And he employs his Lila Shakti in a way that he becomes dependent on his devotees, and he makes his devotees defeating, he creates defeat for his own devotees so that they ultimately glorify Krishna. So this Leela Shakti happens and in two ways, where Krishna himself becomes defeated and then his devotee becomes defeated. In both ways there is transcendental exchange of love. Here Shivji is going to fight with Shri Krishna, and here Bhishma Deva is fighting with Shri Krishna, has brought out so many wonderful transcendental mellows of loving exchanges. Similarly, we find in Krishna's pastime, when Krishna is about to go to the pasturing ground, he denies Balramji to come that day because he knows that he has to go to the Yamuna and has to fight Kaliya. And Balramji will find a little offended because Kaliya is from his own race, Ananta Shesh. So if he does something, he'll feel that Jati wale ko kuch bannam ho gaya, ya Jati wale ko, Krishna is going to now completely insult him. So he said, better he doesn't come, he'll feel offended. And I have to patch up with Balramji. And then he's an older brother, he will not allow him to jump in the lake only, in the first instance. And then we find how Krishna subdues Kaliya and removes his pride. And Leela Shakti practically is working throughout the time and throughout the ages. And even now, how it's working has to be understood by the examples of these great souls, by the narrations of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and experience this deep relationship with Krishna in our own lives. Therefore, Kunti Maharani is praying that she is also remembering his wonderful memories of how Krishna protected all the time. So therefore, Arjun, when he's remembering all of these things, very nice statement in Srila Prabhupada's purport, which actually is very inspiring for my own life. Prabhupada is mentioning that therefore Arjun immediately remembered, and by his remembrance, he was ready to remember and revisit these teachings of Gita in a way that one has to keep pace with the mission of the Lord. One should mold and adjust the activities of one life to keep in pace with the mission of the Lord. And that is what Krishna demands at every interference or intervention of Leela Shakti. He wants to expedite his mission, the pace of the mission. And in today's times, we have the same call of Krishna. The pace of the mission, as per required, today's times, we have to adjust our activities so that we can mold our life in a way that the whole civilization can get the benefit of Krishna consciousness by the sacrifice and by the selfless devotional service of aspiring pure devotee. Similarly, this is the way when we fast, we can also fast for a cause, and that way keep the pace with the fast need of the world in a way that we can celebrate Krishna consciousness with so many other unfortunate souls who are actually looking for Krishna but have no one to give them Krishna consciousness. So this is a beautiful narration. Shivji is going to fight in the next time. There is a place that we visited in Agnigad in Sonitpur, where this entire depiction of the Leela is explained. It is nicely depicted in a beautiful garden in Assam, Sonitpur, where there is a whole picture, the whole diorama of how Krishna is fighting with Shivji, and the whole Chitralekha being taking Aniruddha away. So still now we have this beautiful culture of bhakti in this Bharatvarsh. We need to capitalize on this, and this way when we exhibit the culture of Krishna consciousness to the whole world, we can actually conquer the whole world by this beautiful philosophy and practice of Vaishnava culture. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Since we are in lower time, we'll conclude here.